Luke chapter 18, verse 35, very familiar passage. Let's read through it and see if we find something new for ourselves. Came to pass, verse 35, that as Jesus was come nigh unto Jericho, a certain blind man, Bartimaeus, we know who he is, sat by the wayside begging. And hearing the multitude passing by, he asked what it meant. And they told him that Jesus of Nazareth was passing by. And he cried, saying, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And they which went before rebuked him, that he should hold his peace. But he cried so much the more, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stood and commanded him to be brought unto him. And when he was come near, he asked him, saying, what wilt thou that I should do unto thee? And he said, Lord, that I might receive my sight. Jesus said unto him, receive your sight. And notice, thy faith hath saved thee. And immediately he received his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise to God. This interesting record given to us, the last week of the life of Jesus as he is coming up to Jerusalem. We have record of several individuals along the way. The rich young ruler. We have record of his meeting here with Bartimaeus, Zacchaeus. There are certain individuals that are brought into view as Christ is coming to Jerusalem. Certainly blind Bartimaeus, a rebuke to many. The religious leaders who were part of this throng and this crowd did not recognize who Jesus was. They were looking for a different Messiah than the way he was presenting himself. They were looking for someone to overthrow Roman bondage. Even his disciples, up to the last, would argue who could sit at his right and who could sit at his left. They didn't understand that Jesus had come the first time to forgive sin and will return as a king when he comes in all glory and power. But here blind Bartimaeus sees more than they do. Though he's blind, he sees more than the religious leaders. And even the ones who knew who he was didn't have the guts to call him the son of David. This is a messianic title, and remarkably, Bartimaeus sees a great deal to cry that out. He sees more than the multitude. They're passing by. They don't understand who Jesus is because they'll rebuke Bartimaeus and tell him to shut up. And they obviously don't see in Jesus what he sees in Jesus, and he's blind. So it's an interesting reproof to those of that day, and it removed any excuse they had. Jesus said there were those who had eyes, but they did not see, and they had ears, but they did not hear. And in the middle of all that, he places Bartimaeus, and he was there, he was listening. And the social strata that he was involved in was the afflicted of his own day, the blind, the leper, the lame, the deaf. And it was amongst that strata that he started to hear news of this Jesus of Nazareth, who was actually loving his generation and his own society enough to reach out and touch them and present hope. And you see, here's Bartimaeus, who has been told by the religious leaders of his day that the reason he's blind is because of sin, and that's what they believed. You remember in Jerusalem, as Jesus was entering the temple one day, a blind man was sitting there. His disciples said in John chapter 9, Lord, who hath sinned? This man or his parents? And Jesus would say, neither, but this is for the glory of God. So Bartimaeus has carried this weight. God, if you're there, why have you, you know, this is unfair. I'm born this way. Why, you know, I don't know any sin, and had wrestled with things internally, considered the off-scouring of the world, much like the generation, I think, that I came out of in the late 60s. And I think in many ways our generation was kind of the off-scouring of our own era. And of course, I remember going through that, the whole scene from marijuana to LSD to opium to methadone to glue to anything that I could get to inebriate myself and take away the thing that was gnawing at me, that emptiness that I experienced. I read a report this week by a psychologist named William Moulton Marsden. And he interviewed over 3,000 adults and asked them what they were living for. He was surprised to find out that 94% of them said that they were just enduring their present situation, living for something that they were expecting in the future. They were so many of them waiting for their retirement, waiting for a raise. A lot of them were waiting for the kids to grow up and move out of the house. So but the amazing thing is 94% of the people he talked to were not experiencing life presently, couldn't appreciate life that was around them, had no ability to perceive the value of life, and they were waiting for some phantom, something that would come to bring fulfillment. And if you've been around for any length of time, when you finally get there, then you start waiting for the next thing, because the thing you thought was going to bring fulfillment didn't bring nothing when you got there, so you start looking for the next thing. They say between 75% and 90% of Americans claim to be plagued by loneliness. Something gnaws at them that gives them a sense of isolation. That they feel alone in the midst of a country where there's close to 300 million people. Suicide among teens, one of the leading causes of death. A few years ago, the leading cause of death amongst teens. 95% of those teens that were interviewed that were suicidal said the reason they were that way is because they felt their parents didn't understand them. They couldn't communicate to their parents. They felt isolated. They felt alone. Their teachers didn't understand how they felt or what they were going through. Their peers didn't understand what they felt or what they were going through. And there was that gnawing feeling, that emptiness. And much like Bartimaeus, we see him blind, begging, crying out from the side of the road. There's that feeling that here's the world is passing me by. There are 5.8 billion people on this planet now, and it's turning, and life is passing me by, and I'm sitting here by the side of the road. Nobody understands me. Nobody understands what I'm feeling. Nobody cares about me. They don't understand about me where I'm at. Well, in my generation, we start to hear about a Jesus of Nazareth who could reach us where we were, who loved us the way that we were. He didn't care what we looked like. He didn't care what we listened to. He didn't care what we wrestled with. He didn't care this, that he would come to us where we were in our affliction, and he would accept us and love us the way we were. And I know that same Jesus Christ is alive today, and I pray that we're seeing. When I see bell bottoms coming back, I get excited. Not because I have any that I'm waiting to wear again, but because I think, I hope this all happens all over again, because I know he's the same. And here's Bartimaeus sitting by the side of the road crying out with physical blindness, but with 20/20 vision in his perception spiritually. A little while ago, when A.E. Wildersmith was here and spoke at church, I know many of you heard him, considered to be one of the 12 brightest people on the planet. 3 earned PhDs. He has a habilitation in Europe. He can be a professor, which is much higher than a PhD in America. He can be a professor at any university on the continent, awarded the Countess of Lisburn. It goes on. I don't even know what it means. It goes on and on and on. And came to our house for lunch after speaking here at church, and was at our house. And of course, my kids are a bunch of Indians running around. There's, Wildersmith and his wife, very proper, white beard, white hair, And Kathy said, well, lunch is ready. And we attack the table like Mom, Pa, Kettle's house. Everybody's there. And then we're all sit down and start, and look, and here's him and his wife standing behind their chairs, we can look at them and say, you can sit down. They said, oh, thank you. Then, it was like there's manners we haven't even heard about that are still alive. And still alive in England or something, So they sit down at the table and very proper, and our little one's driving crazy because she's got one of these, that dinosaur show where it says this little baby dinosaur says not the mama, not the mama. Well, she's got this little dinosaur with a pull string on it that says things, gotta love me, not the mama, and it's stuck on this one thing that it says, which is hello, fat boy. And it's stuck. It's stuck on that. And she's going around the table. Hello, fat boy. Hello, fat boy. And his wife is laughing. And we're saying, Hannah, get out of here. So and finally, we get her to bed. And 20 minutes later, the lake goes on. One of the 12 smartest guys on the planet goes, was it saying hello, fat boy? And everybody went crazy. And I thought, how do you like that? I knew something before one of the 12 smartest guys on the planet knew it. Not much to brag about, but... And as we sat there, our conversation evolved to things that were more worthy of his IQ. And He talked while he was here with me about some of his friends who were experimenting with life force. What was life? In other words, now, and largely because of the experimenting with AIDS and so forth, the problem, we understand more about the machine. We understand the helix and the DNA. We understand in the gene. We understand that it's a digital code. And the truth is, what we know about it, evolution is out the window because it's a digital code. There can't be transmutations. But we don't understand who put the information in. That's the amazing thing. Who programmed the machine? We understand the machine better, but what is life anyway? So friends of his, he's got friends, the guy that synthesized vitamin C, got a Nobel Prize for it, is his buddy. He hangs around with these guys. I don't hang around with them. And his friends were experimenting with life. What is life? So he said this one group of scientists, part of what they in what they were doing, they took this group of men that were born blind, and they were working with them on certain things, but they noticed, and they hadn't planned on it, and it wasn't part of their experiment, but they took note that when they drew, when they doodled, that they had perception. In other words, when you see an artist paint a picture, if he wants to give you this sense of depth, he paints the road getting narrower as it goes away, and it gives you the sense of depth. Well, they noticed these men had never seen a day in their entire life, but as they doodled and they drew things that were to be perceived as being farther away, the lines got closer together, and they understood and began to work with these men that there's a difference between sight and perception, two separate things. And what they realize is there are people who see with their eyes but do not perceive certain things, and there are people who are blind who have never seen with their eyes but have perceived things that people with their eyes have not yet perceived. Bartimaeus perceived something about Jesus from what he was hearing from his own peers and his own generation, and amongst the afflicted, Jesus was big news. And as he listened to people saying, he's opening the eyes of the blind, the lame are leaping, the ears of the deaf are being unstopped, he began to put together in his mind, as Jesus said, he had eyes and he was beginning to see, and ears and he was beginning to hear, and realize this one he was hearing about was in fact the son of David. This was the Messiah that the nation had been waiting for, and his view was much clearer because, you know, his sensory organ was his ear. So he hears this big, you know, parade going by. They're moving by the throng, and he says, you know, what's going on out there? What's happening? They say, well, it's Jesus of Nazareth. He said, Jesus of Nazareth, this is the one I've been waiting for. And see, because of his ear, he understood things that you and I probably just wouldn't recognize. Like, you know, what is this? Clippity-clop, 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 bang-bang, clippity-clop, clippity-clop. That's an Amish drive-by shooting. Most of us would never recognize that. Bartimaeus would have known that immediately because of his perception. You're getting so serious, we had to move a little bit in that direction. Bartimaeus hears the crowd moving by and begins to cry out to Jesus. You know, this is the one he had been looking for, but he didn't have the ability to go and look for Jesus. He was blind. He didn't have the ability to seek him out. But the truth is, and you've got to understand this, that Jesus was seeking him out. He wasn't seeking Jesus. He wasn't saying, I hope someday I get to meet Jesus. Jesus was saying, I can't wait till I meet Bartimaeus. Because a little further along on the same road in Jericho, Jesus stops again the procession, looks up into a sycamore tree, and says, Zacchaeus, knows his name. Zacchaeus, come down because I must, and read it for yourself, I must go to your house today. I must. Time was running short. The cross was ahead of him. Zacchaeus, come down. You're the next stop along the way. And after Zacchaeus is saved, he says, because the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost. Earlier in his ministry, when he was heading south, he said to his disciples, I must needs go through Samaria. It's because there was a woman at the well he had an appointment with. She didn't know about it, but he did. And the truth is always, you know, and those of us that are saved realize that we weren't looking for him. He was looking for us. People say, I found Christ. He wasn't lost. We were lost. So Jesus is waiting to hear amongst all that throng of voices, people that had not understood who he was, one voice will cry out, Jesus, thou son of David. That must have been music to his ears that someone knew. And he was waiting to hear that cry, a genuine cry. And he didn't say alms. He wasn't asking for alms. He was asking for mercy. That's an interesting thing for a blind man to ask for. Because he understood his own condition. He understood his own sin. You see, the rich young ruler didn't understand his condition. He came to Jesus and said, "What must I do to be saved?" He was rich. He was young. He was a ruler. He had a lot going for him. Jesus then goes over the second table of the law. And he says, "All of these things have I kept from my youth up." And it tells us Jesus looked at him and loved him. But it was hard for that man to see his need because he was successful. He was religious. He didn't think he had a need. Bartimaeus was honest about his need. He lived with it every day. Because he had sat there and contemplated, he realized his own sin. He realized, and he cries to Jesus for mercy. And as he's crying, some of the disciples, those going before, are telling him, "Shut up, be quiet, don't bother the master." The disciples always are great to represent Jesus, aren't they? "Shut up, leave the master alone," you know what I mean? Because they haven't really perceived who he is yet. And if somebody's telling you to leave Jesus alone, don't listen to him. You come just the way you are. You cry out. If you're a blind beggar sitting by the side of the road like the rest of us were, and you just feel like the world is passing by, don't let anybody put anything on you that is preparatory to come to Jesus. You come this morning, you come the way you are, you just cry out in your heart where you are, and he will hear. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And you see, the important thing is, as Bartimaeus started to cry out the more, it says all of a sudden he heard all those crunching feet come to a halt. Everything stopped, and he listened up. The parade stopped. And you have to understand, at that second, there was something, it was a transaction taking place between the heart of Jesus Christ and the heart of Bartimaeus that nobody else even had an inkling of. Jesus wasn't there just to be in a parade with throngs of people. No one else had an inkling of what was happening. Jesus was there for Bartimaeus. And there was communication, there was a transaction that was beginning between the heart of God and the heart of this blind man on the side of the road. And maybe Jesus is passing you by this morning. And the important thing is, in altar calls, none of that, the important thing is that if there's a genuine cry in your heart, Jesus can stop and he can deal with you in your heart, and none of the rest of us will even know about it. But it has to be genuine. And what was happening that day had nothing to do with the crowd, had nothing to do with the Pharisees, it had nothing to do with the throng. It had to do with two people, Jesus of Nazareth and Bartimaeus. And as Bartimaeus sits there in his darkness, and in the quiet, he hears crunch, crunch, crunch. He hears somebody's feet come to him. And that person says, "The master is calling for you." Mark tells us that he threw his cloak away. You gotta understand, Bartimaeus is in Jericho because it was the Palm Springs of the day. It is where the wealthiest people lived. It was warm all year round. Herod had a palace there. The priests and the Levites, who were very wealthy, though they hated the Romans, had their own community there in Jericho. It was a good place for beggars to be. And his livelihood was in his cloak. He would lay it in front of him. He was blind. And people during the day would throw shekels, whatever, on the cloak. At the end of the day, he would gather it together. It was his means of livelihood. It kept him warm at night. When he heard the master was calling, he took that thing and threw it behind his back. He didn't say to himself, "What if I get over there? What if he yells at me for making all this noise and just leaves me and I've got to come back and try to find my cloak again?" You know, he wasn't saying that. And you see, that's important, because I had a guy here in my office last week, successful, wealthy, in his 50s, had tried everything in life and was empty and is left facing Jesus because of the relatives in his family, sitting in my office with tears saying, "I can't believe I'm crying. I can't believe tears are going to him. I can't believe I'm here talking to him. I can't believe what's going on. What do I need to do?" I said, "You need to quit fighting and let Jesus love you." And he said, "Well, how do I do it?" I said, "You need to get alone somewhere And in all sincerity, you need to look up to heaven. You need to say, I ain't never seen you with my eyes, and I ain't never heard you with my ears, but if you are really there, and you really died for my sins, and you really love me, I'm tired of the emptiness. Forgive me, wash me, cleanse me. And the tears just started to flow. I said, what's wrong? He said, I'm scared to death. I said, what do you mean you're scared to death? He said, what if I go out there and cry out and nobody's there? This is my last hope. What if I cry out and it's just emptiness? What if there's nobody there? I said, there's somebody there. That's what I'm telling you. That's what we're doing here. There's somebody there. There's somebody there. I'm not afraid to put Jesus Christ on the spot. He's risen from the dead. And if you cry out on him and you're sincere, he'll reveal himself to you. If you're not sincere, you ain't ready. But if you're ready and you cry out, he's there. That's the whole point. There's somebody there. He's risen. You mean you ain't seen him with your eyes, but have you perceived him with your heart? And I pray this morning that if you're sitting here and you don't know Christ yet, that something genuine takes place between your heart and his, that a transaction could take place that none of the rest of us know about. But the important thing is, you can't be afraid to lay your heart out there and say, if you're really there, forgive me, wash me, cleanse me, because he's there. And none of us here that know him are afraid to put him on the spot, because he saved us. He could save anybody. The interesting thing is that Bartimaeus was willing to be led. Maybe you're saying, oh no, here goes the spiel. Hey, when this guy came to Bartimaeus and said, the master's calling you, he wasn't worried about what if he's not there when I get there. He took that livelihood, threw it behind his back, and he said, lead me, baby. Take me by the hand, lead me. Some people don't want to be led to Christ. You know, I hope you're not offended this morning if I'm trying to lead you to Christ. What? I'm not trying to lead you to a used car or a bad deal. You've been led your whole life. Don't tell me you don't want to be led. You've been led your whole life. You think my generation in the late 60s woke up one day and looked at their jeans and said, you know, it'd be nice if they were wider at the bottom than they were at the top? You think kids around here 3 weeks ago all of a sudden decided, let's put Kool-Aid on our head and dye our hair? You think somebody woke up after watching The Last of the Mohicans decided he wanted a haircut like this? You understand, we've been led our whole life. Paul tells us that in Ephesians 2, that we were led according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, that we meandered, we wandered without meaning in life, and we were by nature children of wrath until Jesus came and saved us. We were led our whole life anyway. We didn't decide what music we want to listen to. You didn't decide what was going to be on your TV when you turned it on. You turn it on, you watch whatever they put in your living room. You listen to music they pipe across the radio. You know, some generation, your own social structure said to you, if you want to be cool, this is what you listen to, this is what you wear, this is how you look, this is what you watch, this is who you hang around with, and we were led. The problem is that course leads us to hell. It leads us to death. Why would anybody not want to be led to Jesus Christ to receive forgiveness and eternal life and hope beyond the grave and sight? Don't be offended if somebody wants to leave you. Bartimaeus had no pride in regards to that. He'd been led his whole life. He said, the master's calling for you. He said, take my hand and take me to Jesus. And you'd be smart to say the same thing this morning if you don't know him. Now, you got to imagine this guy. It must have been, his heart must have been boom, boom, boom. You know, the loudest thing he was hearing right then was his heart. And I don't know if it was 20 steps or 30 steps or 50 steps, but it was the longest walk Bartimaeus had ever taken in his life, I guarantee you. And somewhere along the line, as this guy was leading him, all of a sudden he stopped and the guy let go of him and he was there. Now, and I guarantee you, he's not expecting to hear, so you're the guy that was screaming, huh? What he hears is, what wilt thou that I should do unto you? And it wasn't in the tone of, what do you want? It was the kindest, what wilt thou that I should do unto you, that he had ever heard in his entire life. What is it that you want, Bartimaeus? That I might receive my sight. Now, he already had a spiritual sight because Jesus said, receive your sight, your faith has saved thee. He had already seen more without eyes than the crowd had seen with eyes. But he said that I might receive my sight. You know what Jesus likes to be asked? He could have just said, I know what you want. And he didn't. He said, what do you want? Ask me. Jesus is not going to violate your will. He loves to be asked, Lord, forgive me. Lord, wash me, cleanse me. Lord, give me my sight. Bartimaeus says, "Lord, that I might see." And you got to imagine this. Here's Bartimaeus standing there blind his whole life, and the light starts to come on. You know, the picture starts to tune in. The very first thing that Bartimaeus sees is the face of God. And I'm sure Jesus went, and it's with a smile. You know, I mean, the very first thing that he beheld was the face of God smiling. When he saw, he had the undivided attention of heaven and of eternity. All the rest, it was just a crowd. It was just people passing by. It was Bartimaeus and eternity. And you know, the amazing thing to me about that is he was spoiled. That was it. All these years, Bartimaeus has been waiting to see. He finally gets to see. And then when he sees the best thing he's ever going to see. The first second he sees, and nothing else after that is worth seeing. You know, he walked around the rest of his life, thought, oh, flowers are nice, palm trees are nice, rivers are nice. But nothing equals that first sight. You know, he must have, as he raised his kids, if he got married, you know, he said, hey, Dad, look at this frog, you know, look at this. He must have said, you know, that's really neat, but I'm going to tell you something. You ain't seen nothing till you've seen the face of God. And it's all wonderful, but none of it compares. Those of us that are believers are spoiled for this world because there ain't nothing. And we could try to fill our lives with worldly things. There ain't nothing that's ever going to satisfy us since we've seen the face of God, not with our eyes, but with our perception. The glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ, Paul says. And you see, that's what sight was invented for. The reason God gave sight was not to look at trees and fans. And the reason God gave sight was so that the creature could look into the face of the Creator and that they could smile at each other and they could fellowship with one another. That's the purpose of sight. And you see, as Christians, I think we struggle. We say, you know, I need to read more. I need to pray more. I need to fellowship. What we're really saying is, I need to be home. I need to look in the face of God. That's what that gnawing is, because, you know, we won't be satisfied until then, in a sense. It says Bartimaeus followed him. Where else was he going to go? He had already seen the best thing. There wasn't anything else worthwhile seeing after he had seen the face of Jesus smiling. And I wonder for us what the first sight of Jesus Christ will be like. In the fifth chapter of the book of Revelation, John says, as he was caught up to heaven, he heard a voice saying that no one was found worthy to open the scroll or to loose the seals thereof. No man in heaven or on the earth or under the earth was found worthy. And John began to convulse and to weep. And he heard a voice as a trumpet behind him saying, weep not, for behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah is found worthy to open the scroll and loose the seals thereof. And he said, I turned to see the voice that spake unto me, and lo, behold, in the midst of the throne, and in the midst of the 24 elders, and in the midst of the cherubim, and in the midst of the angels, and in the midst of the throngs, in the midst, there was a lamb as it had been slain. What he says is, you know, you don't expect to get a bum steer in heaven. He just heard somebody tell him the Lion of the tribe of Judah. He expected to see a lion. And as he turned, he saw a lamb, and the Greek is with the marks of slaughter upon it. And I think, what will our first vision of Christ be like when the trumpet sounds with the voice of the archangel and the shout, and we're raised from the surface of the planet eternal to meet him in the heavens? I think the first sight we're going to see is that of a face beaten beyond human recognition, of thorn marks in his brow, of the nails in the holes in his hand and his feet, and a gaping hole in his side. Much like the children of Israel had to realize Jericho before they could enter into the land, the impossibility and the walls falling down. The first thing I think we're going to see, the first sight of our Savior, will be the sight of the marks of his passion, and we'll remember from the first second we get to heaven that the only reason we're there is because of what he's done and who he is, and because of his mercy and because of his grace. And I think we'll realize then that in the midst of our lives, in the midst of the thrones and in the midst of the elders and in the midst of the angels, in the midst of human history, in the midst of our struggles, in the midst of our marital problems, in the midst of our longings, in the midst of our desires, in the midst of life, there's a lamb as it had been slain. It's the only purpose for human history to continue. And that's what sight is for, to behold that. And we really won't be satisfied until then. But, you know, God included this record here for us, and I believe he's done that so that along the way through the history of the church, there would be those blind, begging, sitting by the side of the road with enough perception to realize that Jesus Christ could mean something to them in their own generation and in their condition and in their isolation and in their loneliness. So they could know that if they cried out in sincerity, that he would stop the world to come to them and give them eternal life. And I encourage you, if you don't know him this morning, that transaction has to be between you and him as we stand and we pray. You need to know that he loves you so much that the whole thing will stop the second that you call out, just so something can happen between you and him. But he wants you to ask. He wants you to set your pride aside to the point where you're willing to be led. So I pray if you don't know him before you leave this morning, you pray with the person who brought you. If you wandered in, you come up, pray with one of us. Allow us to lead you to Jesus Christ. We'll give you a Bible. We'll give you some literature to read. Those of you who are believers that are turning aside to the nonsense and foolishness of this world, look, ain't nothing here that's going to satisfy you. Once you've seen him, what are you going to do? Be happy with Alexis? It'll get a dent in it. It'll burn. It'll rust. You'll kick it. Tires will go flat. It'll eat up your money. There ain't nothing that compares to Jesus. Let's stand and pray.